Hello, friends, and welcome to Coach Cut's Corner. Streaming bright from Michigan's capital city, this podcast is dedicated to helping you better understand the who, the what, and the why of mental performance, personal growth, and Lansing Stars baseball. Coach Cut's Corner, brought to you by Eyewash.
In collaboration with Lansing Community College.
And now here's your host, Stephen Cutter.
Welcome back to Coach Cut's Corner. Today we've got a special guest, sophomore utility player Bryce Wiggins. Bryce has been a spark for our program here at Lansing, a guy who can do a little bit of everything on the field. Last season he played in nearly 50 games, got on base at a high clip, and believe it or not, he led the country in being hit by pitches. But behind those stats is a story of grit, versatility, faith, and family. Today, we're going to delve into his journey and what's next for him. Let's get after it. Bryce, welcome to the studios.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Coach.
First time in here, and hopefully you're enjoying your time, and I appreciate you coming in. Bryce, take us back. What was baseball like growing up in Novi? And how did your time at Walled Lake, Western, and travel ball shape you, you know, before you got here?
Oh, man. So growing up in Novi, baseball was humbling. It was fun, humbling, great experience.
Humbling because?
You know, just like always wasn't the guy. I feel like I've never been like the best on every team I've been on. I've always had to work for everything I've achieved. Even to this day, I was always underlooked because I do have an older brother that was really great.
Okay.
Really great player coming up in Novi. And he was always looked at. I was just always looked at as younger brother. So it just made me kind of realize, like, I have to just be a little better, work a little harder, give a little bit more.
Sometimes that's not the easiest thing to do, even if you know that's what it is or what the road looks like for you, because there's a piece of it that you're constantly like, well, why me? Yeah. Why don't I have this? You know, so that's where some things go. Did you play other sports when you were younger?
Yes, I played AU basketball and a little bit of football.
All right. Which one were you better at?
You know, my parents really didn't push so much for football, more so basketball. They wanted me to stay like being an athlete and everything, but
football because of like the contact injuries, a lot of contact, you know,
yes,
that kind
the
of
injuries
stuff.
Like my dad went through from football. He didn't want like us going through them.
Okay, so your dad had played football, yes, experienced some of the injuries, which I think most football players do.
Yes.
And they felt like maybe basketball was something that could help, you know, round out the athleticism, even though you run a ton in basketball and in baseball, you just don't run as much. Sometimes we do in the fall. Any youth memories that stand out from playing sports?
I'll probably say my first time, like, hitting a home run when I was younger.
Okay. Did you get the ball?
Yes, I remember getting the ball. My dad sprinted to the, he was recording, okay, and like had the phone and was sprinting around, okay, the gate while he was recording.
Breathing heavy and
breathing
everything.
Breathing heavy, yep, going to get the ball. That was probably my favorite memory.
What about travel ball?
Travel ball.
Did you start playing at a young age?
Travel ball probably started about 10, 11 U.
Okay.
Probably started traveling a little more, but my favorite travel ball experience was probably more so recent, 17U, when I was playing for Philly Scout America. All our games were pretty much like had a lot of people there. We had a couple of games on YouTube. I don't know if you know the channel Youth Prospects. Okay. They record like travel ball down south. A couple of our games had about 280,000 views, and it was crazy because we got out of a game and it was a highly scouted game at the WBA in Georgia. Couple of kids came up to me and they were like, we saw you on Youth Prospects, and I didn't see the video, and they asked me for a picture, and I was with my mom, my dad, my older sister walking out, and it was just like shocking. It was nothing I'd ever seen anything before.
Yeah, and you felt important.
Exactly.
And that's a great feeling.
Exactly.
So were you on some pretty solid, you know, travel ball teams when you were younger, or just as you got, you know, 17 you?
When I was younger, I played on the Detroit Raiders for about 2 or 3 years, and okay, we were pretty solid. We won almost every tournament we got into.
Really?
It was just bang bang.
You know, we have a player on our team that was on an 8U nationally ranked team. Do you know that?
Carson Sweet.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
Carson Sweet.
You've always been a versatile guy, playing multiple positions. When did you first embrace being a utility player? especially in today's age where so many people try to, not everybody, but so many people try to, you know, hone in on, you know, I'm going to be this, or I'm going to be a pitcher, or I'm going to be a shortstop, or, you know, that a catcher, mm-hmm. you know. When did you start embracing the utility piece?
I would say last year when I got here. Okay. Well, actually, let me rephrase. My senior year of high school, I played shortstop for my high school. And my coach had always told me, he was like, you don't want to play center. Like, you never want to play anywhere else. And I was just, like, so stuck on always wanting to be a shortstop or be in the, somewhere in the infield. Okay. And when I arrived here last fall, I was seeing, like, the infield. I was like, okay, because I'm thinking I have to get on the field. In what ways can I, like, best be on the field and help our team?
Which is normal. I mean, you arrive to a program, you have fresh eyes, and you start looking around, and you're seeing guys' sizes and strengths and, of course, weaknesses and everything, and you're trying to figure out, like, where do I fit in? We've talked about this a lot.
Exactly. And I was just like, I don't think I would play here in the infield. That's just nothing that I would do. Like, we have great infielders that have experience, know the game, they play it fast. I don't think I can, like, do it. But... So I was just like, one day I was just like, let me try outfield. And then I was out there with Ryan. He's like, I would say he mentored me a lot, taught me so much about the outfield. And
still
I just
teaching. He's
still
coaching here.
Still
now,
teaching yeah. me, even to this day. He taught me just a lot, how to read the ball, what balls I should be trying to come in on, how I should like, how my feet, how I should be positioned on what batters, what pitches. And it really just helped me. I knew I had the athleticism. I just needed the more like the
refinement.
Exactly.
Refinement. Yeah. Baseball's never just about the player or never just about the person. The game's always bigger, you know. It's always bigger, and I say things that, like, the game knows. It just kind of knows.
It does.
What I'm trying to get at is it's about the people around them. Who has been the biggest influence in your baseball journey?
It would for sure have to be my parents. My parents have supported all my decisions, everything I've done for baseball, all the traveling, going, driving 8 hours to Georgia, 9 hours to Alabama. Like, my parents were just, they never had a problem, just wanted to let me get a great experience for it. And my dad, man, my dad's my everything. It's my best friend. Every morning, he sends me something to just motivate me, tell me that I could be better, tell me this, like that I'm like doing a great job, and I just got to keep working and just keep trusting everything that I'm doing and just stay on track.
That's powerful. That's great stuff. Are they hard on you, though?
I wouldn't necessarily say they were hard on me, but they just, it's like a standard of what
higher
they expect
expectations.
From me. Yes.
Yeah. Did you always know that your parents knew the best route? Did you always agree with it? Everything? No. How come?
I don't know. Some things I was just like a little hesitant to like believe in, but or like trust in. Like yeah. some like with working out with my dad, I didn't realize that certain factors of what I need to do, like him being a big thing, like his hips, core was a big thing for him, and he wanted me to strengthen it. And I didn't realize that when I was younger, I was just like, no, I just got to bench. I got to just squat.
I want the biceps.
And I did that. I got faster, stronger. I can rotate better, everything. And it's just, once I realized that, I was like, okay, because I started for real getting serious with my training my freshman year. And then when I went to my sophomore year, the jump I made starting on varsity, it was crazy. And I just like, I got to listen to my dad. Everything my dad says.
Sky's the limit. Yeah. Do you have a favorite memory with your family around baseball? You know, tons of road trips, tons of tournaments, or any moments that still sticks with you?
It's got to be the car rides. We didn't drive to every single one that was down south, but it was just so much fun being in the car, just laughing, cracking jokes, or just falling asleep, taking pictures while people are asleep, and then like getting there. I would say the car rides were like the most memorable part. We'd all be singing, have a little karaoke. That was the best time.
All right. So in high school, you started realizing you're making these jumps. When did you realize that you were like, I think I want to play college baseball? Where was that pivotal moment at?
I feel like that's always been a thing for me. I knew baseball was the sport I wanted to do and just something I was really like solid in. I would say probably like seventh grade, I realized I could play college baseball.
When did you know what it was going to take?
Probably my sophomore to junior year. Sophomore, because I actually committed to the University of Mount St. Mary's when I was a junior in high school, the first recruiting day, I think it was like September 1st, that was when I actually first committed. And when I realized, like, oh, wow, like, these guys are really good, after seeing my visit, I was like, I need, like, to pick it up a little bit more.
Okay. So you commit as a junior.
Yes.
Then what?
It got till about, I would say I committed in September. I decommitted in probably, like, April, right when the high school season was starting. I've been hearing some stuff about the coach leaving or some certain things like that. And that just, I got a little bit more buzz. And I would say I was starting to feel myself a little bit, start talking to other schools, bigger schools. Like, and that's no disrespect to them. It's just how it is. And I was just like, Maryland, that was like drive 8-9 hours. I was like, can I really do this being this far from home my first year? And I was just like, talk to my family. And it's just like, it's not the right decision for me right now.
So then after you decommitted, what happened?
I decommitted, talked to the coach, told him, like, this wasn't for me. That place wasn't for me. And that I appreciate everything they've done for me. Appreciate the offer they gave me and believing in me to be able to play college baseball at the level. You know, winning the summer ball, started talking to a couple schools, playing summer ball games, really just living in the moment. I really wasn't thinking so far ahead. It was just taking it day by day type of thing.
How'd you end up at LCC?
Oh, man. So LCC, I always knew what LCC was and that it was a great program over here. I first heard about it when I was in eighth grade from Bobby Cavan. He was my 14-year assistant coach.
Legacy.
Bobby Cavan. He was saying, I think he was playing here at that time.
Probably
playing here. And he was just saying, like, I'm at LCC, and it's like, it's a great program, and that if you guys ever want to go JUCO, like, this is the place to be. But at that time, you know, kid, JUCO wasn't as known or talked about. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, man, I'm not going JUCO. Mm-hmm. And then got to my senior year, realized, like, 4-year wasn't the great, like, greatest opportunity for me. Like, D1 wasn't the best opportunity for me. And that I needed to develop. Like, and that's all it is. I just have to get better. And I've been talking to Amir Mitchell. He was on the team last year, and he had told me, he was just like, this is the best place to be. He was like, the training serious. We practice every day. Like, you're going to develop some way, somehow. You will develop, and you'll know your weaknesses, and it will get you prepared to move on. And I came on my visit, talked to Coach Ma, and me and my dad walked in. He was like, this is where you need to be, after he got in the car and left. And I was like, yeah, that's where I'm coming.
Pretty cool. Any huge differences between high school and JUCO your freshman year when you start looking at stuff?
I would say the biggest difference for me was the game is just quicker. Like, everything happens a little faster. You got to think a little faster. And I would say there's more attention to detail. There's, like, the small things matter even more. Like, things I get away with in high school doesn't play at college. Wouldn't get away with it.
Yeah. JUCO baseball is not as great unknown that it used to be. But it's still looked at as, like, maybe I don't want to go JUCO baseball. And I'm not saying this is across the board by any stretch. Every kid has Division I dreams, that, you know, as they're going through high school. But then sometimes they realize, for whatever it might be, they don't want to sit, you know, as a freshman or a sophomore behind a junior or senior. They want to be able to get that time. And everybody talks about development. And, of course, that's super important. But also playing is really important to that development. You've got to be able to have some feedback.
Yes.
If you're just training, and you're not playing, you're not getting the feedback of what you're doing in competition.
Yes.
How you're reacting to pressure. How you're adapting to pitchers or hitters or, you know, that kind of stuff. So playing is really important. And that's one of the beautiful things about junior college baseball is – you can go to a junior college and you'll have a great opportunity of playing, and you'll also have a great opportunity of developing. And that's something that is a huge benefit for the JUCO baseball. What's something that you've learned here? Not so much about the game, because you talked about, like, the speed of it and stuff like that, but about yourself.
Oh, man. I would say about myself is that I kind of learned I got to see things from other people's point of view. And because last year, I feel like I came in, like, I was more of a, we've talked about this, I was more so a complainer, and I didn't like certain things of how it was ran. And I realized it's not about me. There's 50 guys here. It's about the team and the process of the program, and it's not going to change for one guy. I got to fall in or fall out. And I realized that I just had to grow into as a person and a human being.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you say we've talked about this, and as you're sitting in the WLNZ studios, I'm certainly thinking about, you know, reflecting back on your journey here, and there's a lot of steps that are still in moments and, you know, special things that are yet to come. But I think back to like first couple weeks of MTNC, your freshman year, thinking like I'm looking at you, I'm watching you. It had nothing to do with ability. Of course, MTNC is really not a physical event. It's a mental event. You know, you guys learn that through process and stuff. But, you know, I was thinking, man, I don't know if he's going to make it. You know, I'm not sure if he's going to make it. And that's the beauty of coaching, is if you can keep yourself from putting people in boxes, you can have those thoughts, but you don't end up putting them in a box. That's the true beauty of it, because you can see the maturation process happen. And it doesn't mean that you come out of it and you're just perfect, because none of us are, but mm-hmm. you can see growth. And you can, pretty soon I'm looking at you in October or November, and I'm seeing more positive stuff. I'm seeing the maturation process. And then pretty soon you end up being one of our two freshmen that, you know, end up playing in a lot of games on a really solid, you know, baseball team last year. And I definitely reflected on that a lot, because it's like, I don't know if he's going to make it those first couple weeks. So that's, I love that. And I've loved what you've done. Now, you led the region. You broke the school record with 28 hit by pitches last season. It was insane to watch it. It was absolutely insane to watch it from the dugout. Fast forward a little bit. We're in our fall season right now. And we've played like, I think, four games, and you've been hit a lot already again. And a lot of people will be like, well, he stands on top of the plate, which is not true at all. You've got some ball magnets in your jersey. That's the that's the true story. But what, I mean, has that been something that's been happening since you've been playing baseball?
No, it just started as I got to college.
So what was going through your head when all that was happening? Because of course we promote, yeah, get on base. That's the time that you can do damage. You can steal bases. You can score runs. You know, it's super important to be able to get on base. And you're just getting hit left and right.
So basically when it first started, I was just like, I didn't think anything of it. And I was just like, all right, like I got hit a couple of times. But then I really started thinking about it when we got into our spring season against Kellogg. I got hit 5 times in one game. And it was like, it was just like, wow, like how does this work? Like, I keep getting hit. But at the same time, it was a bit annoying. But in a way, I was like, I got to get on base for my team. This is me playing in my role. And if that's me getting hit by pitch, get on base to get moved over, that works, help us score runs, help us win ball games. So that was like a big thing for me. I was just trying to just fit in my role the best I could.
It's a great attitude, but it still hurts at times.
Oh, it still hurts. Oh, I would get home from games and be swelled up, bruised up, and just lay down.
And I'm still questioning, how does this happen? It's pretty wild. When you know, we talked about last season a little bit, really special team, a lot of great things. When you look back at last season, what game or moment sticks with you most?
It was a lot of great moments last year, honestly. But my favorite was probably my like hottest moment of the season last year was when we played against Macomb and hit my first ever collegiate home run at Muni, right over the left field wall. And it was just, I heard the going like a freight train when I was rounding the bases. And I was just like, there's no way I actually hit a home run. Like, that's just not me as a player. Like, I'm a big singles type of guy. And hit a home run, I was like, wow. Like, and just seeing everybody on the like sideline happy for me, it was really exciting.
You're more than just a big singles guy. You're a guy that gets on base a lot. And that's a super great attribute to have. I also saw you hit a home run in fall at Oakland too, and we're like, whoa, there's Bryce. You've also been known to bring great energy to the field and to the dugout. Sometimes it's making plays, sometimes it's other people making plays, flashing that contagious smile that you have. Where's that energy come from?
I would say it just comes from like who I am as a person. I love seeing like being a part of great teams and just seeing us all like come together and just cherish our moments and time together. Because now that I think back like to last year, we've talked a little bit about last year, that team last year, every day I still think about that team last year. I still keep up with some of those guys. Those moments and the energy and the bond we had is just something that like you just can't like just put together. It's something that just naturally comes
special.
Together. I feel like, especially, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hard work that goes into that. That's usually a big piece of what ties, you know, all that together. But that's the beauty of playing a collegiate sport. You end up with these memories and relationships that you never really let go of. And pretty soon you're, you know, 5 years in and you're still talking about Bobby Cavan. Your social media bio says God-fearing. Can you talk about your faith and how it plays a role in your approach to life and baseball?
I would say my faith in Jesus Christ is everything. I say I'm nothing without Jesus Christ, and that I'm a Christian that plays baseball, not a baseball player that's a Christian. I say everything I do is faith related. Like when I walk on the field for every game, taking my position, I look up in the sky and just thank God for letting me be here, be healthy enough to just be out here. And I know that my abilities are God-given and God wants me to show who I am through this sport.
How does that mindset help you deal with the ups and downs that come inevitably with this game?
I would say a big thing for that is like just going back to my Bible, praying, reading. I ask my dad a lot of questions. We talk a lot about, because obviously I'm living in a Christian-related household, so we talk a lot about like why I'm going through these ups and downs, what God is trying to lead me through to get me to understand certain things. And I just always just like remember, I got to trust him. I got to trust in my Lord and Savior.
I think in our program, we talk about a lot about how important and impactful the belief system in general is. And the belief system is so impactful in a sport like baseball, where you end up questioning your ability at different times just based off of the results you're getting. You end up questioning things like your path, and you know, you're looking at other people, whatever they're doing, you know, that constantly. So the belief system is super important. You're still uncommitted right now. What are you looking for in the next step, whether that's a four-year school or even beyond? What are you looking for?
I would say I have now realized I know the type of coach I like. I don't like a coach just like screaming or yelling, but a coach that gives you time, lets you do you, but then like brings you back to reality, like as in a coach. And like for a team standpoint, I'm just trying to go somewhere and compete wherever it is. I just want to compete to the best of my abilities.
I'm sorry, that's not the type of coach I am. So hopefully you find a better one at the next level. When you think about your future in baseball, what's the vision you're chasing for the future in baseball?
Obviously, I have aspirations to play and get drafted one day. But I would say my future in baseball is just taking as far as I can keep playing and just trying to help the younger generation, teaching them things I didn't get taught at such a young age. And
you speak about the helping the younger generation. Just about a month ago or so, you ran a youth camp. You want to talk about that real quick?
So, yes, I had a Bryce Wiggins youth camp. Me and my dad have been talking about this for probably about 5 years now. He said, first year of college, summer, we're doing a camp. The camp was fun. It was a great time seeing younger kids out there just having a great time, learning different things about baseball. Had a couple former stars help out with that. Went great. It was smooth, and it's something I'll for sure be doing again next summer.
Well, keep dreaming, keep giving, and keep living. Bryce Wiggins, sophomore utility man, competitor at the plate, and someone who's not afraid to take one for the team. His journey is fueled by family, faith, and relentless drive to make an impact. Bryce, thanks for joining us today. And to our listeners, make winning in life your habit, not your goal. Excellence isn't an outcome. It's a daily standard. Keep stacking bricks and go Stars.
I appreciate you for having me.
Coach Cuts Corner is recorded live in the WLNZ studios with Dalian Lowry providing engineering and production assistance. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it and follow us on all forms of social media. Our program has been built and maintained with the help of many great people. If you want to be part of our mission, you can donate using the link in the show notes below. You can learn more at CoachCutter.com and more about our team at LCCStars.com. See you next time.
featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
The stage is alive and well at Lansing Community College. Each year, the downtown campus comes to life with more than 30 performances at Dart Auditorium, the Black Box Theater, and LCC's Outdoor Amphitheater. These productions are more than entertainment. They're part of the learning experience. Students in LCC's Performing Arts program gain hands-on experience, both on stage and behind the scenes, developing confidence, creativity, and collaboration. From powerful plays to lively concerts, LCC's performances celebrate local talent and the vibrant spirit of the arts in our community. All performances are free. Find out what's next at lcc.edu/showinfo.
Feeling froggy? Well, leap into 20-plus podcasts at lccconnect.org.
LCC Alumni Stories, a show dedicated to highlighting the amazing alumni of Lansing Community College. I'm Steve Robinson, president of LCC, and on each episode, I have the awesome privilege of getting to know one of our many inspiring alums and hearing about their experiences at and since leaving LCC.
Listen to this program and many others on demand at lccconnect.org.
Put a frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
A 7-week job training opportunity is now enrolling, and many can participate tuition-free. Those who have graduated from high school within the last 5 years can attend the Electrical Control Technician Boot Camp at no cost, thanks to grants from the Michigan Department of Economic Development. Those interested in the Electrical Control Technician Boot Camp provided by the LCC Job Training Center can learn more at lcc.edu/JTC.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Welcome to B2B, Boots to Books, the show where we explore the journeys of veterans and military-connected students as they navigate their paths from service to the classroom and beyond. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen, your hosts. Each week, we'll dive into powerful stories of resilience, determination, and success.
Whether you're a veteran yourself, a military family member, or simply inspired by the strength of those who serve, you're in the right place.
Let's turn the page and start this incredible journey together.
Hello, and welcome back to an episode of B2B. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen.
How are you, Rebecca?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. This is, I guess, part two, or it doesn't matter the order that you're going to be listening to this in, of talking jargon. Last time, Rebecca really gave me a really good list of stuff. And when I re-listened to it, I was like, I actually know what I'm talking about. And I felt very proud about that. So now we're going to turn it on you. We're going to talk military jargon.
Yes.
As a civilian and never having service. And I think closest relation to me was like great grandfather that served. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm very much out of the loop. So a lot of the experiences and understanding that I have has been for this job, but I tried to disconnect when I came up with this list and come up with what did I actually not know that I had to learn. And I still do this on a constant basis with you and Andrew of like, hey,
I don't know what you're talking about. And I try to be good about that and not quizzing you, and you all are really helpful. But for those that don't know, or those that are not service connected or anything like that. So to get started, briefing. I know it sounds really dumb, but like when I had said this and I had heard this, you all were like, no, it's like this. And I was like, I don't understand what the briefing means. In my mind, I just go, oh, it's like a summary, like a TLDR of like what it is, but there's more stuff to it.
Yes. So I do want to preface all of this. I have an Army background.
Yes.
So that is where most of my knowledge comes from.
Sure.
I did talk with my husband last night, who has a Marine Corps and an Army background. Mm-hmm. And really the only thing he doesn't know is Air Force.
Sure.
And even that is still kind of like, we've worked in joint staffs and things like that. So we have some idea. So for those who are listening, if I say something and you go, well, that's not how it is in the Navy, I'm Army. That's That's how it is.
Yeah.
So briefing. We talk about briefings a lot in the military, and it's essentially a meeting or it's a class. So I come from the personnel world in the Army, and I worked on the resiliency side and like family programs when I was a civilian, and we had to give briefings. You had to give classes, essentially. This is what your benefits are. These are what resources are available for you as a service member or as a family member. I had to give briefings on the Army Substance Abuse Program. It's literally, here are the things that you need to know so you can continue to be the soldier that the Army needs you to be.
So briefings are not one-on-one. It sounds like they're to a group.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What would you call a one-on-one meeting then?
A meeting.
Okay.
It depends on what you're doing. Like,
It
could be a meeting. It could be a counseling. And counseling in the military can have positive and negative connotations. You can have a counseling where you are in trouble. And
some more performance review type aspects is what I'm hearing for civilian world stuff.
Yeah. You can also have a positive counseling. You have to have counselings when you're looking at getting promoted, things like that. If you're looking at moving into more responsible roles, things like that. So you get counseled for everything. I had a stack of counselings. It was someone higher than you saying, here's the information that you need to know. Sign that we gave you the information.
Gotcha. So. Okay. Levels of awards. I know this sounds weird when I say that. It's, again, being a civilian, the reference points that I have, which are not great, is like what you hear in the news, right? So it's probably like top level awards for stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then literal video games. And I know that's probably the worst reference. It's mildly based in reality of things, but like levels of awards could be, I don't want to say, like you were a part of something versus like you've earned this for your own like individual like accommodations. Is that the correct word?
Yeah. Yep. So there are individual awards and there are multiple levels there. And I think that initial conversation spurred from when we were looking over information from, I think it was actually Bill Krueger's information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when it comes to individual awards, like the absolute top award is the Medal of Honor.
Right.
And that is, anyone in any branch of service can technically receive the Medal of Honor. There's a lot of criteria that goes into that, but anyone could technically be eligible for that. And then it goes down the line. There are service crosses, and those are based on branch. There's the Army Distinguished Service Cross. There's the Navy Cross, the Air Force Cross, and it goes down from there. There's Distinguished Service Medals that are non-combat. And then we get into stars, silver stars, bronze stars, things like that. And then every branch has their commendations. So the Army Accommodation, the Army Achievement Medal, it's accommodations, achievements, down from there. There's a massive list of them, too.
Okay.
Then there are unit awards. So those were individual awards. That is something you specifically did to receive this award. It could be combat related. It could be non-combat related. Then there's unit awards. I had a unit award on my uniform from something that my unit did before I even joined the Army.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was a meritorious unit award. They did something on a deployment. I couldn't even tell you what it was, but there was a unit award for that. And so when you're part of that unit, you get to wear the unit award, which is how it goes. And then there are things like expeditionary or campaign awards. Mm-hmm. So one that I think most of our listeners would be familiar with is the GWAT award, or the Global War on Terrorism Service Medal.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that you received because of the time that you were in service.
Okay.
So I had GWAT mm-hmm. on my uniform because that was just when I happened to be in service.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because I had any specific deployment. It was just what you had during
that
time.
Yep.
Another one that a lot of people in our generation be familiar with would be like the Armed Forces Expeditionary Medal. So that's mm-hmm. just before GWAT. Again, it's time in service. That mm-hmm. one spans a much greater time in service, mm-hmm. but it's when you happen to be in uniform.
Okay.
And then beyond that, just training awards. So you could have certain branches have awards for completing training.
Mm-hmm.
There's like marksmanship awards, things like that.
Okay. So
there's a lot of them.
Yeah, I imagine so. Some terminology that I, again, hear in the office. Mm-hmm. So maybe if you're not interacting with people, there's the concept of like enlisted versus officer, and like even what that means for one. And then mm-hmm. two, the designations that I keep hearing you all say is like there's levels to that, like, oh, E6, E this and yep. that and other things. And like, what does that mean?
Okay. So every branch has their enlisted side and their officer side. So enlisted is the E ranks. So E1 through E9. Officer is the O ranks. O1 through O6, 7 mm-hmm. is usually what you're going to see the most. When it comes to what the differences actually are, enlisted side, it's going to be based on your occupational specialty. So whatever your job is, enlisted side has a lot more occupational specialties. Army, it's MOS, military occupational specialty.
Mm-hmm.
You are essentially the subject matter expert in mm-hmm. that. So I was a 42 Alpha, I was human resource specialist.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I specialized in human resource stuff. There are other 42 series, finance, mail, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into the officer side, you become a generalist. You're no longer really considered a subject matter expert. You are now a generalist in that, in the Army, we call it the branch.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's your occupational specialty. There are 42 series that are their human resource officers,
mm-hmm.
and they could cover really anything that has to do with human resources. So you go from being focused on one thing to you kind of have to know all of it when it mm-hmm. comes to that particular specialty.
So officers are usually supervision, responsibility,
yes.
level of info, all the above.
Yeah. So when it comes to officers, they are the command team.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to move up as an officer, you are taking on command responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking on a platoon leader responsibility. Mm-hmm. You're taking on an executive officer responsibility and then a commander responsibility. And it moves up from there. But you, my husband was military police,
mm-hmm.
but he wasn't out there doing the MP stuff day to day. He was counseling soldiers for doing dumb things
sure.
or counseling them for doing great things, mm-hmm. getting them ready to move on to another unit, things like that. He was doing administrative work mm-hmm. a lot. He was doing the command stuff. And that's one thing that for any of our service members who are still in, who are listening, that are considering officer, like, you're moving around a lot. I was in the same unit for 6 of the 7 years I was in.
Mm-hmm.
My husband in that time was in 4 different units.
Because there's less officers, or the expectations are different, or all
both.
The above?
All okay. the above. So there's different expectations, there are different job roles, and you have to follow a certain path when it comes to officer career progression.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're enlisted, you really don't have to follow that path.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you can be lower enlisted and doing your job, and then you can be a junior NCO and doing that job while being in charge of other people, and then a senior NCO while still doing that job and being in charge of more people. Whereas an officer, you may not be doing that specific job anymore. You're just mm-hmm. in charge of a bunch of people.
And when I work with some students, especially ones that are going to transfer, being an officer, there's usually an education requirement.
Yes.
It's not or up to a certain extent? Question mark.
Yes. So there is an education requirement. You do have to have a degree
to be an officer.
To be an officer.
Okay.
Yes.
What level degree? Sorry, not to
I
quiz you.
I believe it's bachelor's. My husband and I have talked about this before.
And I'm sure it's branch, and I'm sure it's like also because like, so, or do you have to have the degree, or if you've had a certain amount of experience or.
So
yes, and
the way that it works in the most traditional sense mm-hmm. is you have to have the degree.
Yes.
However, you know, we've heard of battlefield commissions. That was really common, especially in World War II, mm-hmm. where your officer chain of command is gone.
Yeah, it's survivorship bias yes. of who's returning and like those people actually know stuff. So we have to promote them because they're here still.
Yes. And yeah. so then it becomes what level of experience do you have? Mm-hmm. And you can go then from enlisted to officer without having that additional degree.
But that's atypical.
And it's extremely atypical. Okay.
Gotcha. All right. So this is another one that like I interact with and I think I know more so mm-hmm. when we talk National Guard. Mm-hmm. versus reserve versus active.
Yes.
Those are the ways that I've split it and if it should be split in a different way because people are like, oh, you're this. And it's like, right, but like you're not, what level are you being told where to go all the time, I guess?
Yeah.
it is in the civilian mindset. It was like, well, how much freedom do I have of doing my own thing and versus being told where I have to be constantly?
Yeah. So, and this could be a whole discussion in and of itself. So when it comes to the most basic breakdown of that. Active duty is this is your 24/7. This is your day in, day out. You are in uniform. You are the property of the federal government all the time. You are required to live in certain places. You know, you're stationed somewhere. Depending on what your situation is, you may have to live in barracks.
You could be active, though, and be domestically like in the U.S., correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. So our bases, the majority of our bases are CONUS, which is the continental U.S. It's okay. It's in country here. We do have
CONUS. So you just use an acronym I've never even heard of until this. Yes. I'm learning right now. This is great. I love this. Okay.
We do have OCONUS bases, which is outside of the continental U.S. Okay. So Germany, Japan.
We have hundreds of them.
We have hundreds of them.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So you can be stationed there, and that's where you're being told to live. Mm-hmm. That's where you're being told to work. That's your day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And you have that responsibility, and there are certain things that you are and are not allowed to do because you are a property or the property of whatever branch you happen to be part of for the duration of that time.
Because it's the contract that you signed.
That's correct. The contract that you signed. Yep. And then you get into Guard and Reserve, and you are still technically property of that branch, mm-hmm. but you also have a civilian side. Mm-hmm. So you are not told exactly where you need to live. Mm-hmm. You're told what unit you are going to be part of and where you need to drill out of. Mm-hmm. And if you're activated or put on orders, then yes, you are their property and you have to do what they tell you to do. Mm-hmm. But when you are not in uniform, you are 98% your own person. You okay. have to maintain your own job. You have to maintain your own housing. You are responsible for making sure that you are still surviving, essentially. Mm-hmm. And then the difference between Guard and Reserves can get down even farther than that.
Sure.
When it comes to Guard, it's a state entity. So we have the National Guard Bureau, which is still a federal entity that falls under DOD. But then the states also are in charge of their National Guard, mm-hmm. whereas reserves are still a federal entity. So my husband was part of the reserves after he got off of active duty, mm-hmm. and he was part of one of the few MP units here mm-hmm. in the state. And you can be assigned to a reserve unit from any state. We have people that fly in from other states all the time mm-hmm. for reserves. Mm-hmm. The training schedule can be a little wonky because they have a different funding line mm-hmm. than active duty and guard do. So we would have service members who just, they wouldn't be drilling for months at a time because the funding line wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Guard is a state funding line. So they are usually a little more consistent when it comes to their drilling.
And that leads into the next thing. You said drilling.
Yes.
What does that mean?
So when I signed up for the Guard forever ago, it was 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. Mm-hmm. So you go to your unit for one weekend a month and you do your army thing, whatever it is that you need to do. Mm-hmm. And then for 2 weeks out of the year, you have annual training and you go do your army thing for those 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that was how you made sure that you were able to maintain those skills. Mm-hmm. Anyone that has been part of the Guard or even tangentially associated with the Guard in the last 10 years knows that it's not just 2 weeks and it's not just 1 week in a month. Drills can span several days. Mm-hmm. I've had 1 day drills. I've had 5 day drills. Mm-hmm. Annual training is usually about 2 weeks. Sometimes it will be extended. That one is less common because annual training is one of those, like, we have to plan it out way in advance. We have to have the funding line for that,
right,
as well.
Right.
But drilling is you putting on the uniform, being property of the military for that amount of time and going and doing whatever your job requires. Mm. For some people, it's going to be making sure that those vehicles that haven't been run in a month are still running.
Sure.
For some of us, it's going and making sure that paperwork is still being processed because mm-hmm. there are still going to be some service members who are active Guard Reserve. Their job is still 24/7 Army, mm-hmm. even though they're in the Guard.
Mm.
But they can't do
everything. Right. Yeah.
So you would come back in and you are supplemental. You're assisting them with these things that need to get done. Or if you're gearing up for a deployment or something like that, there could be some additional tasks that you need to do to help get ready for that deployment.
Okay.
Things like that. It can vary depending on what your unit's mission is.
Okay. Gotcha. Because again, with what we civilians and other people will see on the TV, especially is like during natural disaster, mm-hmm. something, right? It's like there's flooding, there's whatever, like we've talked about before, there's all the ice storms and stuff in Traverse City.
Yep.
And a bunch of people here in Michigan got deployed for that to help out, facilitate, assist, other things where, again, like the state government in that way, and or, you know, it could be, again, federal government activations mm-hmm. with those things. So, yeah, being able to go, even though so checking those supplies, because I don't want to be, hey, there was like tornadoes recently, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, like none of these vehicles have gas in them. Like you can't just be like that, right? It all has to be checked in, even if it's not someone's full-time job to be doing that constantly.
Yes. So, yep.
Kind of different, but similar. Talking about when we talk benefits and we're talking GI Bill benefits,
mm-hmm.
there's disability for the VA. And when I initially would hear disability or you'd see that, you would think of Wounded Warrior Project or other things, which is like, you always go to like the worst thing, which is never great, where it's like, oh, disability, this person can't walk, this mm-hmm. person X, like can't or has to have assistive equipment or other things like that,
yeah.
right? But when we talk about that, there's like a rating,
mm-hmm.
and per the VA, it's a percentage, mm-hmm. which sounds goofy because if I'm like, well, I'm this percentage disabled. And if I tried to like make it into a math formula of like, how can we do this to help people and stuff? I could be like, okay, so what does that mean? If I can just stop rambling through it.
So I used to be a veteran service officer and I had to do the VA math, and I have a full page for anyone that is watching. I have a full page that explains VA math. The easiest breakdown of that is when it comes to that rating, we take how efficient your body is still functioning, and then we subtract it from there.
That's weird and gross, but it makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. So we take your disability ratings from highest to lowest, and it's whatever functionality you're at for that particular rating.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets subtracted from there, and there's a bunch of math that's involved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially like a 50% rating, mm-hmm. and a 50% rating makes you 80% disabled. Yes.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Okay. I just made a face for anyone listening.
So it is, you start at 100% functional.
Okay.
And then you subtract 50%.
Okay.
Because you are 50% disabled from whatever that particular disability is. And then you apply 50% to the remaining 50%. So it is 50% of 50%, and then it's rounded.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when we say percentages, like people aren't trying to do like dissection stuff in their head. Mm-hmm. Like this can be like neurological. This can be like a bunch of other things.
Yes.
It's not just like a physical ailment within
Correct.
These things.
Yeah. So the way that the VA does it is they're going to look at you overall.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to see, okay, you have this disability, this disability, this disability. And it could be a physical concern. You could have received a debilitating injury in mm-hmm. combat. You could have tinnitus. You could have sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a mental health concern, such as PTSD, depression, anything like that.
And this was before you were service connected, and now you do have this post-service connected.
Correct.
Just asking.
Yeah. So there's service connected, which is this is something that is directly related to something that happened to you while you were in the uniform.
Okay.
And then there's non-service connected, which is something that may have been pre-existing.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't prove that it was pre-existing or
sure.
it was something that happened to you that cannot be directly related to your military service, but might have happened while you were actually still
it exacerbated
in uniform.
It something
yes.
else like yep. that. Okay.
So if you're a guardsman and you get into a car accident and it's not when you're in a drilling status and that causes a long-term disability, that's going to be considered non-service connected because it happened while you were a guardsman, but it wasn't during a duty status.
And those are different percentages if it's not service connected.
Non-service connected is usually considered 0%.
Okay. Interesting.
It's not something that is going to be factored into your VA disability rating.
Okay.
Which becomes a whole fight
right,
in
right,
and of
right,
itself.
Right, right, right. Well, I was driving to it and then whatever.
Yeah, so
and
if...
Like,
if you are on your way to or from a drilling status, then you can usually fight it to be service connected.
Sure.
But if it is a random Wednesday, 2 weeks between drill time,
sure.
and you're just on your way to McDonald's and someone T-bones you,
right.
it's not going to be considered service connected.
And if someone's 100% disabled,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't mean that they're like bedbound, all these things. Because I interact with service members that are 100%,
mm-hmm.
but they're still like... doing stuff
yep.
and then going to enter the workforce and other things. So like,
yeah.
I think 100% means you can't do anything, which is not the case in what these definitions mean.
Yes. And that has been a very common misconception that mm-hmm. I've seen over the years is, well, I'm 100% and so therefore I cannot XYZ. That's not true. You are able to still do some of these things, but there could be certain aspects of parts of your disability that could inhibit you from doing them the same way that you could, you know,
right, sure.
you being Dustin, for those who couldn't see me pointing.
Yeah.
So being 100% doesn't mean that it's taking you out of
society,
life.
Everything, right?
Yes.
Because there's 100%.
There's 100%.
And then there's
100% permanent and total, which means that there will never be a change. There could theoretically never be a change to how you
mm-hmm.
function. So I'll give an example. I'm 30%
okay.
rated. I could have some kind of medical intervention, usually surgery,
mm-hmm.
that is going to improve my functionality for this particular disability that
mm-hmm.
I have.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, my rating would go down.
Mm-hmm.
If you are 100%, I have not seen a lot of ratings that are 100% and not P&T. So you can be 100% if you have a cancer diagnosis.
Sure.
VA will automatically bump you up to 100%
sure.
while you are actively dealing with that diagnosis,
sure.
but it's not going to be a permanent and total rating
right.
because the thought is that you should hopefully end up in remission
sure.
and then they would reduce your rating again. If you're 100% but not permanent and total, the idea is that you should be able to receive some kind of medical intervention to help with this disability.
Is there anything above permanent and total?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's permanent and total.
There's like three levels to 100, yes. which is interesting.
Yep. You
okay.
can never go above 100%,
okay.
but there is
but
more.
We can add definitions.
Yes, but
yeah.
there is more than 100%.
Okay.
There's permanent and total, which means, you know, this is your disability is never going to improve,
sure.
essentially.
Sure.
And then there is 100% totally disabled, individually unemployable, TDIU, which is you are 100% permanent and total,
mm-hmm.
and it is going to affect your ability to maintain gainful employment.
Okay, sure.
And so the VA pays you accordingly.
Sure, sure. So those are not individuals that usually we're interacting with at the school.
Correct.
Because they could be seeking education, which there's, but when we're looking at them training or the workforce and things like that. Okay. Yeah, that was a lot to break down. Thank you. So if someone has questions about their own stuff, mm-hmm. about percentages and stuff, who should they be talking to about that in general?
They should be talking with a veteran service officer because...
At the VA.
Okay, or at a county veteran service office or with a veteran service organization because those individuals are going to be the most up-to-date in anything that is VA related and how to do that VA math.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we broke down a lot of definitions for you today. We'll probably end up circling back to some of these things. I didn't even get to some of these items on this list, which is totally great. I think you really broke it down for any of us civilians or other people that are trying to understand service connection. So thanks so much, and we'll see you guys next week.
Sounds good. Thanks.
You've been listening to B2B, Boots to Books.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through the inspiring stories of veterans and military-connected students.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your community.
We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us on social media or take a listen to previous episodes at lccconnect.com or your favorite streaming platform.
Remember, every story is a step forward.
And together, we can build a bridge from boots to books.
Until next time, stay strong.
And keep moving forward.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College Stars Athletics has a proud tradition of helping students build teamwork, communication, and leadership skills through sports including volleyball, cross country, basketball, softball, and more. Game schedules and team highlights are available at lccstars.com.
Keep yourself connected with what's happening in mid-Michigan by joining us for Community Convos, a show from LCC Connect, where we talk with the people who put the festive in our festivals and those that give traction to our attractions. Find out who's on the combo and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
My name is Lola Silvestri, and I'm going to be 95 this year. I was very independent. I fell, and I had to have Meals on Wheels. America, let's do lunch.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Lansing Community College's Business and Community Institute provides businesses with customized synergistic trainings that realize logistical opportunity. Learn more about the future of business today at lcc.edu/BCI.
This has been LCC Connect Weekly, a presentation of LCC Connect, a podcast network developed by Lansing Community College. Production and sound engineering for LCC Connect Weekly and its podcasts are provided by Dedalian Lowry and Brendan Skipper. Our theme song, Start a New Day, is performed by Samuel Biggs and licensed through DeWolf Music. Powered by the voices of LCC staff, faculty, students, and community volunteers, LCC Connect shares conversations and stories that reflect the creativity, culture, and the spirit of our college and community. We thank all of our hosts and contributors for sharing their time and talents. To hear today's featured podcast on demand, learn more about the network, become a guest, or explore ways to get involved, visit us anytime at lccconnect.com.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.